The gospel reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 13, verses 1 through 9. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Such great crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there, while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on the rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly, but since they had no depth of soil, they died. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some hundredfold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen." See if I can. You may be seated. So last week, we started our new segment of Living with Integrity on peace. Peace. And Pastor Gary talked to us about peace in the home. Today we're going to talk about peace in the workplace. Where do you find peace? Some of us find peace outdoors, at the lake, at the beach, in the forest. Some of us find our peace in activity, exercise, running, hiking. Some of us find peace being with other people. Some of us find peace being alone. But I suspect the workplace is generally not a place you think of when you think of peace. Or maybe your workplace is school, and that's not always very peaceful either. Or if you work at home, well, I can remember those days when it felt like I was the wagon surrounded by the Indians in an Old West movie. Peace in the workplace can be very hard to come by. And part of that may be because of the way we define peace. We define peace as an absence of war, or calm, tranquility, quiet. But what if peace is something more? What if peace is more along the lines of shalom, wholeness, completeness, wellness, health? How do you have peace in your workplace? There's an old movie, 9 to 5. Some of us have seen it from the 80s. Three women are working in a very toxic environment. Their boss is just awful. There's backstabbing. There's gossip. There's holding people down so somebody else can fight their way to the top. One of the women gets upset, and she accidentally puts rat poison in the horrible boss's coffee. In a series of comic events and crazy things, they end up taking him captive and keeping him in one of the homes. My favorite scene is where they have him attached to a garage door opener, and when he goes to try and break out, the garage door opener pulls him up and he's dangling around. It's been remade into a musical, and Common Table's going to go see it on the 23rd of July. So if you haven't got tickets and would like to see what this movie's about in the musical, check them out. It highlighted a time in our work life when things were really bad. And a lot of the things that were in that movie were true and are sometimes still true in workplaces today. We meet Ruth and Naomi in the middle of their journey today. Elimelech and his family had been living in Israel when there came a famine. So they went to Moab, because in Moab there was food. They immigrated. When they got there, they found work and they found food. But Elimelech died, leaving Naomi and her two sons alone. The two sons eventually marry a couple of Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. And then the sons die. Naomi hears that there's food again in Israel, and she decides to go home. She and her two daughter-in-laws, Orpah and Ruth, start out for home, and they don't get very far before Ruth says, "Look, you girls, I love you, but why don't you go back home to your families, to your mother's house, maybe get new husbands. I'll go on alone. There's a lot of weeping and pleading. Orpah finally decides to leave, but Ruth makes that declaration that many of us remember. I will not leave you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Naomi gives up in the face of this determination, and they head back to Bethlehem, arriving just as the barley harvest is starting. Naomi herself feels empty and bitter because she's lost her husband, both of her sons, but she does have Ruth. It's just in time for the barley harvest, which is one other sort of bright spot in the story. The barley harvest starts about the time of Passover, and it continues for quite a while, and after that's the wheat harvest and then the grape harvest. So we're at the beginning of the harvest season. Ruth and Naomi don't have a lot of options. Women in those days did not work. They were considered to, if they worked, it was not a very nice profession. And they're in desperate straits. So Ruth says, you know what, I'm going to go out and glean. I'm going to go pick up the leftover grain in the fields, in somebody's field where I find favor. What do you think, Naomi? Is that a good idea? Naomi says, yeah, go, my daughter. Good luck, you know, basically. Be careful. Stay safe out there. We don't know necessarily a lot about gleaning these days, although there's a lot of it that still happens, both in the U.S. and around the world. It's a very ancient thing. Gleaning, the idea was that the most vulnerable in society, the fatherless, the immigrant, the widow, the old, the very young, who have no other means of getting food, can go out into a field and collect food. God leaves laws in Leviticus explaining how this works. The landowner is not supposed to harvest the edges of his field. And if any drops in the ground, you know, as he's harvesting, if something falls, he's just supposed to let it stay there. And he's not supposed to go over his field twice or another time to pick up anything that fell. What's left is there for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widows. It's kind of the leftover bits. And people do glean today for things like leftover potatoes or the stuff that's not very pretty and wouldn't sell in the grocery store. People can go pick it up, and it often goes into a food bank. Okay, harvesting in these times was hard, physical, manual labor, and it required equipment. You would bend over with a sickle, like this, all day, cut the grain, put it behind you. Cut the grain, put it behind you. Cut the grain, put it behind you. It required that you would be strong, that you had a sickle, the equipment, and that you would be able to do that all day long. Behind the gleaners would come the gatherers. They also would be bending over, picking up the grain that had been cut, and putting it into bundles or sheaves. Again, you're going to have to be very strong. You may have to carry the bundles or sheaves to the threshing floor, or you may have to carry them to a wagon. You have to be physically fit to do this, and you have to have equipment. Oh, and you have to get hired. But the gleaners did not have to be any of those things. They did not have to get hired. They did not have to have the equipment, and they did not have to be that fit. They could follow along behind and pick up whatever was left, and hopefully there would be enough left to feed your family for that day. And then you get to do it again tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day. They don't even make as much as a basic day laborer makes, but hopefully they get enough to eat. So for Ruth and Naomi, The situation is desperate. They have, at this point, we don't know, they have no land. They have no man to work for them. They've been gone, so they don't have any stored up food. But Ruth can go out and glean. And Ruth knows something about God and God's providence, because she's been learning under Naomi about God. And so Ruth puts herself, her trust, her faith in the fact that God is going to take her to a place where someone will show her favor and she'll be able to glean and feed Naomi and buy some time. My husband's now retired, but when he was working, and when I told him about this, I asked him, you know, what was the most coolest thing about your job that they did really well? And he said they did great meetings. I thought, oh, wonderful. But, you know, we do a lot of meetings when we work. And I asked him what made them so great. He said they had a list of rules that they would put up every time they had a meeting. And one of the rules was assume good intent. He said it made a difference when you went into the meeting. You figured everybody was there wanting to do the best they could do, and they had good intentions. He said it may not necessarily change the situation. There may still be conflict break out, but you figured everybody was trying to do the best they could. Boaz comes to visit his field, and when he comes in, he greets his workers, "The Lord be with you." And they reply, and also, oh wait, no, no, no. That's what we do here. They replied, "The Lord bless you," which is what we're really saying as well, isn't it? See, Boaz comes into the field, and right away, he transforms that field with his good intent from a workplace to a sanctuary. That field becomes a sanctuary for all his workers, for all the gleaners, and even for him himself, because he has called the presence of God into the middle of that workplace. And you can see the response that that has happened over time when he asks his foreman, "Who is that young woman? Whose is she? I don't remember hiring her." And the foreman says, "Oh, well, she's Ruth, the Moabite, you know, the foreigner that came home with Naomi." And she asked if she could glean. And you know, she's been really doing a good job. She's been working all day hard, and she only took a short rest in the shelter when she got too hot. Well, Boaz is curious, so he goes over and he says, "You know, I want you to stay here. Stay in my field. Don't go anywhere else. I've told the young men not to bother you." And now we realize how dangerous gleaning could be. "And by the way, you know, there's a water jug over there. If you get thirsty, just help yourself. You don't have to go get your own water." Boaz just opens this space out like crazy for her. The sanctuary has become not only a sanctuary with the presence of God, but a literal sanctuary where Ruth can come and be under protection and have water provided for her, refreshment, that cool water. She's overwhelmed. You know, she's a foreigner. She expects that this guy is just going to rip her out. Most landowners would say, "Okay, glean, but, you know, stay out of my sight, don't bother me, whatever." No. And so she falls down to the ground and says, "Why are you so kind to me? Literally, why have you shown me so much chesed?" And he says, "Well, I've heard your story. I've heard how you've been taking care of your mother-in-law, Ruth, Naomi. I've heard how you came back with her, leaving your own family. I've heard how you got up so early this morning. You've been working all this long time. May God take care of you. Now he has not only made that field a sanctuary for her, but he has literally called God into this place on her. A foreigner, right? Somebody you don't even notice. Somebody who's supposed to be invisible. He has called God into care for her. She says, basically, not a lot. Wow. God's presence comes into our space when we call it in, when we bring it in. Remember walking around in the circle with God's chesed? Boaz is in the middle of that circle. But he's making that circle bigger all the time. So it comes time for lunch. You ever been the new kid at lunch? New kid at school? The lunchroom is a landmine, right? Where do I sit? Did I bring weird food that everybody's going to make fun of me? Am I going to eat alone? What do I do in this situation? Boaz makes sure that Ruth is not the new kid in the lunchroom. When it's time for lunch, he sees her, and he calls her over. Hey, come on, come on. And, you know, basically tells the workers, you know, spread out a little bit. Let's make room. They do. They sit her down in the circle. Right in the circle, the Moabite with the Israelites, right? We don't do this. Then he hands her some of the bread with the vinegar sauce. Time goes on, he says, hey, you know, let's have a look. Here's some of the roasted grain. The boss is feeding not the workers. He is feeding the workers, too. He's feeding the gleaner, the one who can't even be hired. Because of God's chesed, he has moved from let them glean the letter of the law to feed them, which is what the law was meant to do. Feed them. Ruth has lunch. She doesn't go home right away. She has so much lunch, she has leftovers, and she stuffs those away safe, and she goes out and she gleans some more. And she goes to beat out at the end of the day what she's gleaned. She gets an ephah, which is about 3/4 of a bushel, or roughly 29 pounds of grain. This is just the grain, not the chaff, just the grain. On a good day, a worker might get 1 or 2 pounds of grain. She, the gleaner, has gotten roughly 15 days' salary because Boaz has opened up the space for her. He has let her glean not just on the edges, but if she sees a good piece in the stock, she can pull it out. And in fact, he's even told his workers, you know, just kind of throw some down for her. Make it easy. How do we have peace in the workplace? How do we come to this place where we are walking there? Remember that sower at the beginning in Matthew who goes out and he scatters his seed? And in some places, it can't grow at all. Some places it grows up, but it gets choked or the sun burns it up. But in some places, it comes out and gives a 100-fold harvest, or 60 times harvest, or 30 times harvest. Now, Jesus interprets the parable as God's word. This is what happens when God's word lands in our ears. But you know what? It's also what happens when God's chesed lands in our hearts. When we have the chesed of God with us, we carry that presence of God surrounding us wherever we go. And wherever we go then is in the middle of God's strong, steadfast, dependable love. And no matter what, that's where peace is. Peace is not the absence of conflict. Peace is the presence of God in our lives, in our world, and yes, even in our workplace. May the peace of God go with you today.